Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. Today, as you heard on the news from NPR, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg apologized for her remarks about Donald Trump. She said, "On reflection, my recent remarks in response to press inquiries were ill-advised, and I regret making them. Judges should avoid commenting on a candidate for public office. In the future, I will be more circumspect." This hour, we'll be discussing all of her comments and Donald Trump's tweets in response to her comments, the reaction from legal scholars. Our guest this hour has written about the whole issue, and we're happy to have him with us on the air here. We're going to be talking with Sam Baker, staff correspondent at National Journal, previously covered health care in the Supreme Court for The Hill, and he covered the passage and early implementation of the Affordable Care Act at Inside Health Policy. We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do. And our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well at K Dunn Show. Thank you very much, Sam, for being with us. Hi.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. What, you know, I know it's hard to get inside the mind of somebody, but it's interesting to sort of speculate as to why she would make these comments. And not only did she say them to the New York Times, she made comments to the Associated Press, she made comments about Trump to CNN. So it was obviously something that she felt she had to say. It wasn't an inadvertent comment. It was something that she talked about in several places.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it kept intensifying, you know, which is probably a function of the questions she was asked. But she made sort of a comment to the Associated Press first, and then, whoa, kind of really went there with the New York Times, and then really went there with CNN, which was the third and final interview where she said, you know, he doesn't believe in anything, and, you know, really her most direct criticism. I'm less surprised that she walked it back than I was by how much she continued to intensify her criticism.
Mm-hmm. And did you think she had it in mind that she's going to retire after the election and she's just saying what she thinks about things? She's been, you know, outspoken as Scalia was on issues every now and then. She certainly gives the press more availability than most other justices. It would seem as though she had something in mind here.
I think that's probably right. I mean, you're exactly right that she is pretty comfortable with both the press and sort of public appearances where she takes questions from law students or law professors or whoever it is. She and Scalia, when he was still alive, were always the two who were most willing to sort of put themselves out there. And she has attained some celebrity relatively recently with mm-hmm. the whole notorious RBG thing. And I think she's pretty comfortable with that and maybe just, I don't know if she intentionally leaned into that here or just sort of let it get the better of her. I think we probably will see her tone it down a little bit.
She did get criticism from the New York Times, from a lot of legal scholars. You talk about those scholars in the piece that you have written about this. She took a lot of heat for what she said.
Yeah, and it really legitimately, genuinely was a line that a Supreme Court justice hasn't crossed in a very long time. I mean, you could go back to, you know, the days of the Founding Fathers and find some more politically active justices. But in the modern court, you know, sure, we know where they stand. We know, you know, who nominated them. She has been more willing than her colleagues to talk about active controversies in mm-hmm. public, which has frustrated a lot of conservatives. They think, you know, you're prejudging a case. But then to talk about an election, that really was a new step that no one had taken before her, at least in a very long time, and it caught a lot of people off guard.
Mm-hmm. So what are the rules that the Supreme Court has to abide by? Are they bound to some kinds of standards?
They are and they aren't. It's a good question. You know, you saw a lot of conservatives saying, well, if there is a Trump administration, she'd have to recuse herself from any case involving that administration. And the rules for recusal of the Supreme Court are essentially that the justices make their own decision. They recuse when they think they should. There are a couple of reasons why they do that, but they are not formally bound by the same rules that bind lower court judges, just because the Supreme Court is a different animal. But they say they follow those guidelines anyway. So she wouldn't have to recuse herself, but the argument is still out there that she should and would be out there if there is a Trump administration.
And from the people that you talk to, a lot of legal scholars are saying that she was out of bounds.
Yeah, that seems to be, you know, a lot of people have defended her comments, but I think if there is a consensus, it is that she probably shouldn't have done this. I think she acknowledged that with her statement today. You know that she didn't say that she was wrong. She didn't take back any of the things she said about Trump. She just said, I shouldn't have said it. And I think that the reaction to this has sort of shown that we don't really expect it to be this political of an institution. You know, this was very shocking. It made a lot of news. It took a lot of people by surprise. And so, you know, for folks to come back and say, oh, the court's always been political, well, then we wouldn't be making as big a deal about this.
Those who are defending her talk about the candidacy of Donald Trump and feeling many people who do not like him really don't like him and think that he would be dangerous to the country. Do you think that she spoke out just because of the nature of the way some people view his candidacy?
I think so, and I'm sure that she believes that, and a lot of people believe that, and that's that. Yeah, I think that's exactly why she did it. And a lot of people, her defenders, have said, is it any surprise to you that this is how Ruth Bader Ginsburg feels? You know, she's a liberal justice. And no, it's not. It's just a surprise that she said so.
You quoted Case Western Reserve University law professor Jonathan Adler, in the unlikely and horrifying event of Bush v. Gore, like election litigation, I do not see how Justice Ginsburg could refuse to recuse after these sorts of comments. But the title of your article is, Would She Recuse Herself from Trump Cases? Don't Count It.
Right, because that's pretty much up to her. There are not bind. If she doesn't recuse herself, there is no there's no avenue to sort of protest that decision or force her to. There's no election for her to lose, obviously. They have lifetime appointments. There's no body that can censure the Supreme Court justices. So it's up to her, and she's clearly comfortable being out there to this extent.
And what did you make of Donald Trump's tweets?
I honestly don't fully understand some of them, just grammatically. I think he had every right to push back against against what she said and to criticize her and to, you know, at least request an apology, which he didn't get. That didn't seem out of bounds. But then he has one that says they're going to, if he wins, they'll swamp RBG with conservative justices. And I don't know if that means, some people think maybe that's a typo. He meant swap, replace her with a new justice, or try to pack their, I don't know what that one means, but classic Trump, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting, he tweets everything. He's talking about it, I'm sure, too. What about his base? Does it, and he's also talked about how it's going to energize his base, her comments. Is he right?
I think probably so. You know, I don't think, if she was making a political calculation, I don't think it was a correct one, which, again, she's not a professional politician, and so she, it sort of stands to reason that she would be bad at politics when she waded into them. But I don't think this, I don't think there's anyone out there who would be swayed by Ruth Bader Ginsburg's opinion who is not already pretty fervently anti-Trump. And there are a lot of people, even people who don't like Trump, even a lot of conservatives who don't like Trump, who were turned off by what she said. And I think his base, absolutely, you know, they complain all the time about a rigged system, and I think this just plays right into that.
It is true, though, when we think of the Supreme Court these days, and give me a historical reference for this, we really think of them in terms of 5-4, now 4-4. We think of liberal justices and conservative justices. We certainly know where Scalia, before he died, stood on the issue of abortion and that he would say things about abortion, yet he'd vote on abortion cases, right?
That's right. He was criticized for, you know, how vocally he would talk about that. And she was criticized a little bit for some of her comments in these interviews talking about active cases. I think that's just something that people had to live with Scalia and will have to live with Ginsburg. But the argument that they shouldn't talk so much about active cases and controversies is, it is true that even though we think of these justices along their sort of typical 5-4 lines, cases come to the court in unique ways. They all have some procedural quirk or some legal issue, and those things really can fall in ways that are not sort of typically partisan. You know, people, the justices do cross their sort of party lines for legal reasons, and you don't like to sort of give the public the impression that their minds are made up, and even if those sort of legitimate issues present themselves, they're not going to matter.
Mm-hmm. And yet, we tend to be in a time when the court has members where we believe that because of where they stand, either conservative or liberal, that we can pretty much count on how they're going to vote on many issues. We're surprised occasionally, but are we surprised that often?
Probably more often than we would expect in sort of smaller cases. The big 5-4 decisions are in things like same-sex marriage, where you knew exactly where everyone was going to come down. But, you know, Obamacare is a good example. Nobody
right.
expected Chief Justice Roberts to write that decision. And actually, one of the points that I wonder if a lot of liberals who are defending Ruth Bader Ginsburg right now remember, Elena Kagan was actually a vote. She and Stephen Breyer, both Democratic appointees, who voted in that decision to limit Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. So people do, again, cross party lines based on the law, even in pretty high-profile cases mm-hmm. sometimes.
And when people say that the judiciary should be above politics, what do we mean by that? What does it mean to be above politics?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They'll never be completely removed from politics. They're appointed by a president,
right.
confirmed by a Senate, and they rule on political issues. But I think that what we sort of mean by that is that we expect them to put those opinions to the side, or at least not to let those opinions override their legal judgment. You know, there is such a thing as being a conservative judge and a liberal judge, and that, you know, refers to your view of the law, and that's fine. I think we're all sort of used to that. But, you know, you don't want, for example, I was an Obama nominee, therefore I will side with the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want people to look at the law, and they can bring in sort of a worldview, but you don't want those decisions to be really about electoral politics.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of her apology today, was it sufficient? Was it too short?
No, I think it probably was sufficient to quiet down sort of what I would call, for lack of a better term, the serious critics. The New York Times editorial board, the Washington Post editorial board, a lot of legal experts, I think, they weren't upset by the substance of what she said. They were upset that she said it. That's all she apologized for, and I do think that's enough.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at on the inside on a lot of this, do you anticipate, has she given any indication that she intends to retire soon? And the other question, of course, would be how many other justices do you imagine will retire soon, and thus the new president will be filling a lot of vacancies?
That's right. Every time she is asked about it, she says, I'm still doing fine. I'm going to stay in this job as long as I can. I really believe that if the next president is Hillary Clinton, Justice Ginsburg will probably step down maybe even before the midterm elections, while there might still be a Democratic Senate. Because she has said pretty openly, when people asked her why she's not stepping down before the election, while Obama's still president, she said he couldn't get someone confirmed who I want to replace me. So she wants to be replaced with a true liberal justice. And so I think that she probably will ultimately time her retirement to try to achieve that. And yes, there are a couple of other justices who are sort of getting up there. Justice Kennedy and Justice Breyer, I think, would both be right around 80 years old by the midpoint of the next president's first term. So you're looking at whoever the next president is could have a really profound impact on the Supreme Court, which, of course, could last for generations.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls. What do people in our audience think about what Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice, said about Donald Trump, what you make of her apology, which was issued today, in which she said her recent remarks were ill-advised. She regrets making them. Justices should avoid commenting on a candidate for public office in the future. She said she will be more circumspect. Did she go way out of line here with what her comments said? Would you agree with the criticism she received from many legal scholars, from the New York Times editorial board, Washington Post as well? Or is it a welcome relief to have somebody speak his or her mind when it comes to presidential candidates? And if you feel strongly about somebody, is it okay for her to have made those comments? Does it play to Donald Trump's base? We welcome your thoughts, and here's how you give us your thoughts. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, we'd love to read your comments there, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to our guest and to phone calls. Our guest is Sam Baker, staff correspondent at National Journal. He has covered the Supreme Court and covered many other issues as well. We're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Donald Trump. Peter in Baraboo, hi. Hi, Peter.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm a frequent caller. I could not resist making a comment. Trump is honored by his party and by his constituents for being, quote, authentic, which means speaking what he believes to be the truth, regardless of consequence, regardless of PC, if you will. Why is that not applied to Judge Ginsburg? I believe it's essential for her in her position to recognize and speak to the flaws of such a candidate as Donald Trump, number one. Number two, from a historical perspective, when people in positions of respect and authority withhold their judgments in these kinds of extreme situations, I think our country and the world is not served well. We need the leadership and guidance of people to step forward and to counter quote, authenticity, if you will, and its misinterpretation in this case. And I honor Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg for her strength and comments. I only wish she had held on to her conviction.
And before you go, Peter, if we, God forbid, you get another election like the year 2000 and it went to the Supreme Court, would she have to recuse herself, do you think?
Well, you know, we know what happened in 2000 was not appropriate. My hope would be that rather than recuse herself, she insists that the process continue and move forward so that we can have a fair and equitable election, so that the people's choice, which was not George W. Bush, could be fortified and be the outcome of the election.
Thanks, Peter, for your call. Sam?
I think, you know, to Peter's first point, he's seen as authentic. Why wouldn't she get in the mix, too? Your question really gets to the heart of why that is, and that is she has a very important role to play in adjudicating a whole lot of questions about the limits of executive power and the exercise of executive power and the things that President Trump would do. She is in a position of great authority and a lot of respect, and we need to sort of count on that part of the process working. And it has clearly raised some legitimate questions about how well that very important part of the process can work when the people who have to do it sort of get involved in the election.
Thanks, Peter, very much for your call. Let's go to Rick in Hartford next. Hello, Rick.
Hi. I say I'm a first-time caller.
Thanks for calling, Rick.
And the reason I'm calling is I know justices choose their words carefully, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering why the justice used the word ill-advised, because in my thinking it's almost deferring responsibility to a third party. I mean, if I do something and I say I was ill-advised, it's implying that there's other involvement besides my own thinking.
Sam?
I I see your point. I don't think that's what she meant by it. I think she just meant I should have stopped and thought twice about what I was doing. So I believe that she, you know, is accepting responsibility for having said what she said. And she did go on to say, you know, I will be more circumspect in the future.
Mm-hmm. But she did think twice about what she was doing because she said the comments again and again. I wonder, she was probably advised to maybe to make this kind of statement because a lot of people were saying you maybe thought about what you said, but you were wrong about saying it out loud.
Yes, I would not be surprised if she got some advice to issue her statement today apologizing. But I think that what we saw her saying about Trump was all her.
Right. Thanks very much for your call. Call again. Peter in Waterford. Hi.
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 I don't feel that she apologized. I don't feel that she apologized at all. She didn't say anything about Trump. She didn't say I was sorry. She said that I was ill-advised, and I retract my statement. And I agree with her, and I agree with the last two people that, she didn't apologize.
Did you consider it an apology, Sam?
She didn't apologize to Trump. That is just clearly, plainly a fact. I'm not super surprised that she didn't apologize to Trump. I think what she said was, I said some things. Implicitly, she's acknowledging that she does believe them, but saying she should not have said them. I don't really know who she would apologize to other than him, and she's clearly not going to apologize to him. The caller is correct. She didn't apologize to him. She just sort of said, I made a mistake, and I won't do it again.
Mm-hmm. Does she put the political discourse by her comment on the same level as the discourse that we've heard from Donald Trump?
I don't think so. I mean, Donald Trump has sort of scrambled where everybody is and how everybody talks and what everybody thinks about everything. But I think this is probably something that, you know, the court is not in session for another couple of months. Presumably she's not going to be giving any more interviews this summer or many more interviews. So I think she can sort of step back and leave this alone now. And let Trump, you know, he'll continue to do what he does, and Hillary Clinton will continue to be the one who antagonizes him. And I think Ginsburg can sort of safely step back from the fray here.
Will we hear calls at the Republican National Convention for her to resign?
Probably. Some people have already said that she needs to. I don't think she does, but she did need to apologize.
Thanks, Peter, for the call. Let's go to Dave in Madison. Hi.
Yes, I would like to remind the listeners that Justice Scalia regularly partied with Dick Cheney. He didn't have any problem ruling on cases where Dick Cheney was involved. They were very important matters of state. Clarence Thomas ruled on a case where one of the litigants employed his wife. So I don't really see that this meets some standard for recusal.
Sam?
The Scalia example is a good one. I think that's the closest sort of parallel with any other justice to do something similar to this. And people on the left were furious with Scalia for not recusing himself in that case. And he issued this very long point-by-point explanation of why he didn't. Which, you know, Scalia did not bow to public pressure easily. So he clearly must have sort of seen the complaints and taken them somewhat seriously because he went through and said, look, Cheney wasn't a party to the lawsuit. I was at the same place as Cheney, but we weren't together, this, that, and the other. And so whether you, you know, agree or disagree with the decision he made there, the complaints that he engendered were pretty serious. And, I you know, people were upset. People thought that he had done the wrong thing there. And so, you know, I don't know if the appropriate response is, well, we'll just do it too.
Mm-hmm. You can almost see why they were such good friends, can't you? They must have had these rip-roaring conversations from completely different political viewpoints, but by golly, they said what they thought.
They really must have. And, it's I wonder how much different her situation right now would be if he was still there.
Right.
You know, because no one else on the court right now is in the mold of the two of them. Mm-hmm. They are these two sort of very comfortable public personalities, and everyone else, you know, really shies away from that. So it's she's now sort of the one who's out there instead of out there with her good friend.
Has anybody else on the court made reference to Ginsburg's comments?
No. No. No.
And they
probably
won't.
Just because they don't do interviews. Mm-hmm. Only she does. And no, I don't think they will.
Thanks very much, Dave, for your call. Karen in Winona. Hi.
Hi. I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg can be compared to a grandma of a very large family. She is the elder. And she sees a hurricane coming, and she wants to warn her family. She has spent her whole life working for others, and she's had all kinds of experiences with especially discrimination against women. And she sees all of what Trump has been doing as a danger for our country and for women in the country. I don't need to say any more. Thanks.
All right. But you also have to ask the question, she's a Supreme Court justice, and you have to refrain from being overtly political. You have to refrain from really entering the fray of a very contentious presidential race. Many would say that. Many have said that about it.
Absolutely. And you know, employment discrimination, all sorts of discrimination, that's a great example because those are the kinds of cases that come to the Supreme Court. She's not powerless here. She's not just a bystander. She is in a position to decide those issues. And, you know, I think making statements like this raise questions about sort of her credibility doing that, which is not what anybody wants.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back for a moment and get more of your thoughts about this. Pierce on Facebook writes, given the strong friendship between Ginsburg and Scalia, do you think that Justice Ginsburg's comments would have been more measured if Scalia were alive today? I wonder if his death had some effect that made her a little less reticent to share her personal opinions publicly.
That's an interesting theory. Mm-hmm. Initially, I sort of doubt it. I mean, he didn't say it publicly, but he was no fan of Obama. You know, you could tell that much from some of his decisions and just the tenor of them. I don't think that that losing her friend has sort of pushed her farther out there.
Thanks, Pierce, for your comments. Let's go to Bob in Coon Valley. Hi, Bob.
Hi. The issue of recusal has come up several times, and we've had the issue here in Wisconsin as well with the state justices. In some cases, seems like they should have recused themselves from issues, and they don't. And my question is, how are the rules, if there are any, for recusal established? Is it a constitutional thing that justices make their own decisions about recusal? Or is it possible that legislation could define circumstances in which a justice must recuse himself?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So there is a federal law that says judges and justices should recuse themselves from any case where there's reason to doubt their impartiality or something very close to that. The issue with the Supreme Court is there's no sort of enforcement mechanism. Lower federal courts are all bound by a code of conduct that they all agree to when they become a judge that, you know, spells out here's the process for somebody to formally request that somebody be recused. That request would be reviewed by another judge. But the justices, although they say they follow those procedures, they are not bound by them because the Supreme Court is different from other federal courts. So really, we just trust them to make the right decisions on their own.
Does that answer your question, Bob?
Well, I guess, obviously there are situations in which the public feels that trust has not been honored. And so, again, is it not possible? I understand the concept of, you know, the division of powers, that if the legislative branch were to try to establish code for the judicial branch, maybe that's just not constitutionally possible. But it seems like somehow there should be some mechanism where a justice can say, I don't need to recuse myself, and if I as a citizen or somebody as a president or senator should disagree with that, as we obviously have had that situation in the past, could there not possibly be some mechanism to establish, you know, rules whereby that justice
right.
can be overruled?
Yeah.
Yeah, there absolutely could, and there are a lot of people out there. There's a group called Fix the Court that sort of advocates for a bunch of just transparency issues related to the Supreme Court, and a lot of other advocates who have said the court should, fine, if you're not going to follow this code that other justices or judges follow, write your own, but put something down on paper that says here are the standards, here's how we will evaluate them, here's what the process is, and stick to that. So that would still be, you know, the justices writing their own, but at least they would, you know, put rules on paper. And I think there's an argument to be made that that would sort of help the public have more faith in the process.
You wrote in a recent piece that lower court judges are often bound by an official process. They are bound by an official process for recusing themselves from cases in which they might have a conflict, and parties to a case can formally seek a recusal. Why is it? Is that true of all lower court judges? Is that official process across the board, that they all adhere to some kind of official process? And have there been attempts to have the same kind of process be something that Supreme Court justices have to follow?
This comes up from time to time. Chief Justice Roberts wrote a report about this issue in 2011, or at the end of the 2011 term, where he said, sort of laid out the reasons the Supreme Court is different. A lot of them are nuances of how the Constitution sets up the Supreme Court versus the federal courts. But he also made the point, we are the final authority. You know, a district court judge recuses himself or doesn't, well, the case can still go up to an appeals court. From an appeals court, a judge recuses himself or herself or doesn't, the case can still come to us. But once it comes to us, that's it. And so you need to sort of have a higher bar, he said, for when you take yourself out of that process.
I see.
Because we are the final say.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to that, too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bob, very much for your call. We have lines open. They've been very busy. 800-486-8655. We're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her comments about Donald Trump, not only to the New York Times, but also to the Associated Press and to CNN. She took a lot of heat from a lot of people who would normally be her allies, New York Times, Washington Post, many legal scholars, and she's issued an apology today. Donald Trump has said she should resign over these comments. We're asking why they were said, and would you agree that it was just not very proper for a Supreme Court justice to make the comments? 800-486-8655 is our number. Patricia on our WPR page says, politics and the U.S. Supreme Court have intersected in the past. Justices have actually run for office while serving. Alito mouthed a comment at a State of the Union address. I believe it was in reference, and we'll get Sam more history on this, to the president's comments about Citizens United. The Senate is currently employing a political tactic to delay the confirmation of a nominee. We speak of liberal or conservative often when talking about the court. Given Trump's various unconstitutional proposals, a justice speaking out seems reasonable and even necessary. Patricia says Justice Ginsburg speaks truth.
Again, sort of as we talked about before, the court, sure, the court is tied up in politics, but the way that an issue gets settled by the Supreme Court and the way that an issue gets settled by Congress and the president, those two processes are just extremely different. Even though political issues end up at the court, the processes are very different, the substantive issues are very different, and you know, I think that there, again, as evidenced by the uproar over these comments, there is some assumption that although the justices have ideologies and political leanings, that they put their legal interpretation above their concern for electoral politics. And I think that's what's going on here.
Dan in Boulder Junction. Hi, Dan.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
One comment. Sandra Day O'Connor did not recuse herself from the Bush v. Gore that put George Bush in the White House, even though she had before that announced she wanted to retire to go home and take care of her ailing husband, but she didn't want her successor appointed by a Democrat. And Samuel Alito did not excuse himself or recuse himself from the same case, even though he had two sons who were attorneys working in Florida for Bush.
Sam.
Alito wasn't on the court then. He was a George W. Bush appointee. But O'Connor is a relevant example. People have brought up that she made some comments during an election night party that seemed she seemed distressed about George W. Bush, and she didn't recuse herself. And it just goes back to the same question. You know, we know that the justices have their own personal beliefs and their personal politics, but we would hope that they are able to look at a president they like and say, I do like the guy, I voted for the guy, but this particular thing that he did just isn't constitutional. Mm-hmm. Or say, I didn't like the guy, I didn't vote for him, but I can't really say that this was illegal, I just don't like it. And once they wade into politics, we do have those questions. People ask them about O'Connor then, and they're asking them about Ginsburg now.
Alan sends this message, why should a judge or any other person have to give up First Amendment rights?
They don't. She had the right to say this. It's just a question of whether she should have exercised that right in the way that she did.
And let's go next to Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hello, Dave.
Good afternoon, Kevin. Good afternoon.
Hello, Dave. You're fading out. Hello? Yeah, call us back. Your phone is kind of fading. So let's pause for a moment and return. We're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her comments about Donald Trump, Donald Trump's response, the many calls for her to apologize for what she said, the Supreme Court justice had no place because they're supposed to be above politics to make comments, more than one comment about someone who is running for president. She did apologize today, and our guest this hour is analyzing all of it for us. Stan Baker is a writer, staff correspondent at the National Journal, and has covered the Supreme Court, and will continue taking calls momentarily. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls for Sam. Elsa in Appleton. Hi.
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 Hello. Hey. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure, I'm Elsa.
Very thankful to be able to call and to say that I think Ruth Ginsburg has every right to say that Donald Trump is not who we would want representing us either here nor in foreign countries, and she should not have to apologize to anyone. And she was right on target.
And what if he wins and she has to cast her vote about a Trump policy?
Well, I think she can do it with her head held high and let her conscience rule her vote.
Mm-hmm. Do you think she can, Sam?
Yeah, I think she probably can. She's been on the court for a long time. I believe that she is still a, responsible justice. But, you know, if you're inclined to defend Ruth Bader Ginsburg, maybe picture a hypothetical in which Clarence Thomas gives three consecutive interviews and says,
right,
we can't have another Clinton in the White House.
Right.
It'd be a disaster. You know, she's going to run us off a cliff. You'd be upset.
Yeah, what?
Liberals would be upset, and rightfully so.
What about that, Elsa?
Clarence Thomas says so little, I wouldn't expect him to make a peep on that subject.
Mm-hmm.
He's been keeping his mouth completely closed, and that's probably a good thing. I never was for him being on the court anyway, for his treatment of Anita Hill. It was a mistake that he ever got on there.
Thanks, Elsa, very much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything? I'm thinking again about what Patricia said. Justices have actually run for office while serving. Do you know what that is?
You have to go really, really far back in American history
uh-huh.
to find those sorts of examples. I believe that's true. I'm blanking on exactly who it was at this moment. But, you know, William Howard Taft was the president and then was on the Supreme Court.
Right.
So that's, but I think that's about as recent as you can, an example as you can find, and it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world has changed a lot, and American politics have changed a lot since then.
Thanks, Elsa, for your thoughts. Ted in Milwaukee, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I just have a comment and a kind of a question. I don't know which justice it was that I think it was Obama during that State of the Union called him a liar. And I'm not for sure if he ever apologized and did they ever call for his resignation. And this was like doing a sitting president and doing the State of the Union.
Yeah, that was over Citizens United. Was it Alito who mouthed
it was.
The words? Yeah.
Yeah. It was Citizens United had just come down. President Obama got up during the State of the Union and characterized that decision. He was talking about an unlimited flow of money, including foreign money, into American elections. And that was when Alito mouthed, "Not true." I kind of feel like everybody was well within their rights there. The president doesn't have to like Supreme Court decisions. The Supreme Court doesn't have to like the president not liking their decisions. You know, they were in that event talking about a case.
Thanks,
right?
Ted.
Alito, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your call. Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Hi. I'm suggesting that Justice Ginsburg has, to use the expression, called the conservatives bluff. Now, let me give you some background. For years, the conservatives, sometimes the judges themselves on the Supreme Court, some of them, you know, we mentioned their names. Definitely people in great power, McConnell, the leaders in the Senate and the House, have been pushing right up to, if not over the edge, of political decorum, all that sort of thing. And it's almost as though they have been waving a red flag in front of liberals for years, daring the liberals to step out of line, to break decorum, the pretense of being above argument and debate. And now Ginsburg has, and they are beside themselves claiming to be being mistreated. She's speaking the truth about a man who does pose a real danger to this country going forward. Should he bring himself, should he be elected and bring his people into power?
But Kurt, what do you think of many people? She's been criticized by liberal voices too, that you simply have to have justices be above politics. And she really sought out all of these media places. Is that good decorum for a Supreme Court justice to do that?
No, of course it isn't. We don't like that. We want to think or have the illusion that these things are all according to some book of protocol and decency, even though we know better. And she has taken the clothes off the emperor. She's taken away the veil and shown that the heat, the degree of disagreement and anxiety, etc., that's in this country. And liberals are not above the loss of decorum, but the conservatives have been pushing it. Look what they have been calling President Obama for years. Everything that he's tried to do, they have demeaned, made him demonic. And now when somebody also with a public position says the same thing truthfully about the man they are about to make their presidential nominee, now they're bereft. Mm-hmm. They can't understand that such a thing should be said by a person of substance.
Thanks for your thoughts, Kurt. Sam?
As electoral politics has gotten more and more toxic lately,
sure has.
The court has mostly been able to stay above the fray. Public approval of the court is higher than it is of the president, not Obama, but you know, politicians and Congress. The public's trust in the court has remained pretty high. As an institution, it has been able, pretty much, despite ruling on some enormously controversial cases, especially over the past couple of years, they all sort of try to keep their head down and rule on these things and preserve sort of the institution. That's a major concern, obviously, for Chief Justice Roberts, who I'm sure couldn't have been happy to see what Justice Ginsburg said, and I'm sure he would have been equally unhappy to see our hypothetical Clarence Thomas analogy. You know, the court has done as good a job, I think, as it can at sort of staying above the fray while the bickering between Congress and the president has gotten worse and worse and worse.
Kurt, thanks for your call. Jill in New Berlin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make the point that conservatives are all about strict constructionism, and yet there's nothing in the language of the Constitution that specifically prohibits this type of comment from Justice Ginsburg, or being political for that matter. And then the other thing I wanted to say was one of the examples of a justice running for office was Justice John Jay. Early in our history, he ran for governor of New York twice while on the Supreme Court. He lost the first time. The second time he won, so he gave up his seat on the court to be governor of New York. Your guest mentioned, well, there hasn't been anything in recent history. There's another example in 20th century history, although I can't recall it. And there have been many, many examples of justices playing cards with presidents, writing legislation, actually, and engaged in political activity. It runs through the whole history of the court. In Justice Scalia's defense of himself for not recusing, he was a historian as well, and he lists a lot of examples, a lot of precedents, if anybody wants to look them up. And Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC has done a wonderful job of ferreting out examples of this if you want to look online for that. And that's all I really had to say.
All right. Thanks, Jill, for your call.
It certainly is true that there is politics on the Supreme Court and in the Supreme Court justices. Most of the current justices, if not all of them, spent some time in the Justice Department in political roles. Justice Breyer worked on Capitol Hill for a while and for the Judiciary Committee. So again, those things aren't, we all know that, you know, we all sort of accept that. That's very different, I think, than weighing in on an election that is happening right now.
Mm-hmm. In time for one more phone call, Jean in Ashland. Hi.
Hi. The callers seem to be ignoring what we call separation of powers and the reasons why executive, legislative, and judicial branches of our government are supposed to keep themselves separate. How should the, regardless of what was done in the past, any time, how should it properly be kept separate for and why? There's a good reason why.
Sam?
I don't think anyone is saying that, you know, Justice Ginsburg broke the law or that there should have been a law that criminalized the kind of speech she's making. You know, we could have it this way if we want, where the justices of the Supreme Court get in the mix with electoral politics more frequently and more overtly. I'm just don't think that, well, first of all, I don't think most of her colleagues on the court want to see the court go in that direction. I think she said as much in her statement today. So, you know, it's not a constitutional question. It's just sort of a propriety question and a question about how the judicial branch preserves, depending on how you look at it, either its independence from the other two branches or the perception of its independence from the other two branches.
Sam, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Sam Baker, staff correspondent at National Journal. He also covered the Supreme Court for The Hill. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers for producing this show, to Kiri Salinas for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks for all of your viewpoints, many of them, on this issue of Sandra Day O'Connor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I was thinking of her because she was brought up this hour, and Donald Trump and all that has ensued after her comments about Donald Trump. Well, we're going to talk about Barbara Streisand with the author of a great new book about her, and we'll hear some of her music and hear that incredible voice. That's coming up for the second hour of the show, and I hope that you will stay with us.